everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's time for It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me. I want to apologize if you hear some of the background music, the background sounds, the beeping. We're broadcasting live from New York City and from our home base at Responsible Eating and Living, and there's a lot of activity going on outside. I really wanted to do this show today. There's a lot of important information that I wanted to share with all of you, my wonderful listeners, but I can't do it myself. And that's why I'm inviting your most favorite guest on this program and my most favorite guest, Gary DeMattei. Gary, are you with me?
I am with you. Can you hear me?
Check. 1, 2. I can hear you loud and clear.
Hey, everybody.
How's everybody doing? Good. I'm good. You're good. So, Gary, you just came home today from California. You were out in the Bay Area, and I was in the foreign lands of Costa Rica. And I think we'll talk a little bit about some of that soon. But yeah. I want to focus on kids today. Can we do that?
Yes, kids. What's the matter with kids today? Nothing's the matter with kids today. As a matter of fact, kids are taking over the world once again and are blowing up the internet.
That's right. You know, you were talking recently, wondering when we're going to have another one of these waves like in the 60s.
Right.
And I think we're seeing some of that. It's not the same as it was. It's different.
It's different.
Yeah, but I'm hoping it makes a big difference.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. I'm so happy to see that this is happening. It's terrific. But anyway, what are we talking about today?
What are we talking about today? So what motivated me to start with is a recent article that appeared on the CNN website. And they were talking about some new guidelines that came out by an organization called Healthy Drinks, Healthy Kids, which is a project of Healthy Eating Research. And Healthy Eating Research is a national program of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And they claim, and I've got air quotes when I say that, they claim that their beverage recommendations are based on scientific research and through consensus by the following organizations: the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, the American Academy of Pediatric Dentists, American Academy of Pediatrics, and the American Heart Association.
Whoa, that's a lot of cash right there. All of those organizations you mentioned, that's big money. Big money stuff.
So when I know that they add this in there to give their website some cachet or some cash, however you want to say it.
Some cash.
It certainly does bring the cash, though.
It does.
And it makes me a little suspect. I mean, I know these are all reputable organizations, but they're reputable organizations that are connected to
cash. Let's call it what it is. They're connected to cash. They need to make sure that their funders, whoever they may be, continue funding. So, and again, I'm not claiming I know anything about this, but it just sounds suspicious.
Okay, so the CNN article, the first thing that was really problematic was the headline. And headlines are important. Why? Because
that's all people read.
And that's what brings in the cash.
Right.
Right? When you click, you get more numbers for advertisers to support you.
When you click, you get cash.
What cash? I said I wanted to talk about kids, but I think we're talking about cash.
Well, unfortunately, kids are exploited in more than just food-related issues, but here we're focusing on the food-related issues. But we could talk about other ways kids are exploited, but we won't go there. We'll talk about it with respect to food.
Yeah,
and because the parents are going to be doing the clicking, and then they're going to panic if they feel like they're... Anyway, continue. I don't want to...
The headline. This is on CNN.
Right.
Most young children shouldn't drink plant-based milk, new health guidelines say. I'm going to say that again. Most young children shouldn't drink plant-based milk, new health guidelines say. What does that mean to you? How would you interpret that?
Well, you know, you've got a wave going on now. I mean, how would I interpret it? Or
the headline. I mean, yeah. When you read it, it's like, oh, there's something wrong with plant-based milk. I shouldn't be drinking plant-based milk.
Yeah, let's go pour it out. We've got a refrigerator full of plant-based milk because everybody was telling us dairy is bad, and now they're telling us plant-based milk is bad. So yeah, that's it sounds kind of suspicious. But continue. What yeah. did you find out? Because I know you are the research guru, and that's why people come to Responsible Eating and Living. They come for the truth.
Truth.
And we give you tools to find the truth. So
the truth and tools.
For healthy eating, living.
Healthy eating and green living. Yeah. Amen. Yeah.
Amen.
Okay, so this group, the Healthy Drinks, Healthy Kids, they have a website. I don't want to promote them. But a lot of what they have to say is good. And that's usually where some of the danger lies. A lot of organizations, they are promoting some good things, but they do it by sprinkling some stuff that isn't good.
Right.
So the good stuff is children and adults shouldn't be drinking sweetened beverages, and sweetened beverages that include soda and these flavored milks and also fruit juice. Now, fruit juice might not be as bad as soda and flavored milks, but fruit juice is a lot of concentrated sweetener without the fiber. And it's the fiber that helps the sugar go down in a delightful way. I had that song, just a spoonful of sugar helps medicine go down. But sugar in food is managed very nicely when it's paired with fiber. When it isn't, it wreaks havoc. That's in very simple terms.
Right. So
recommending not drinking sugary beverages is a good thing, but then they add to it that plant-based. Children should be drinking 2.5 glasses of dairy milk and
wrong.
Not drinking plant-based milk.
Wrong, wrong, wrong. Okay, so let's talk about the plant-based milks that have sugar in them as opposed to the plant-based milks that don't. That could be where there's this slippery
problem.
Slope here. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's where CNN failed, and that's right. where Healthy Drinks, Healthy Kids failed, because people need information. They need the truth. And the truth is there are some good plant milks and there are some bad plant milks. Are you a good plant milk or are you a bad plant milk?
We have this discussion in our own household, and we read the label. How many times have you said that on this program? We read the label.
The label.
You know, and I'm really interested to about this whole sugar concept, because again, I think that's how kids are exploited with fruit juices and sugary drinks, because it tastes good, right? So you would never tell your child we're going to bring the juicer out and we're going to make some vegetable juice today, and it's going to be fun and it's going to be really good for you, because automatically you aren't going to get the same reaction you would get with your child when you say let's get a juice box. And I was watching a bunch of kids on the airplane on the way back, and many of them had a juice box right up to their little wonderful faces, and that was the go-to thing at the airport. You know, you can't bring any liquids on through security, but once you get into the airport, there's an abundance of juices and things like that for kids, and again, parents are buying that stuff. They're throwing it in their bags. They're putting the little plastic straw in the little paper box, and they're giving it to their child. And what about, why wasn't there a single stand in the airport that sold vegetable juices, green juices, juices that are made with carrots? You know, carrots are sweet. Why aren't we talking about the nutritional value in that? Why are we only doing articles about the obvious? Duh, don't give your child soda and sugar-laden drinks. Oh, really? Thank you. I think we all know that now. But it's still, to me,
I don't know if we know that, if everyone knows that. But it's complicated, right? It's complicated because there are so many issues that are related to the choices that we make, and I'm going to get back to this later, but people think they have free will and they have free choice, but our food and our drinks may be subsidized, and the sugary drinks are cheaper. They've got a whole marketing team that uses psychological science about psychology to manipulate and attract people to buy their products.
Right.
And you see that in commercials. Because we are.
Consumers.
Yes, we are not citizens. We are consumers.
We are consumers. And in this society, we are consumers. And it's spreading. And we're being treated as consumers. And that's evil. It's evil. And it's evil to manipulate the truth. And that's basically what we're getting now, and we've been getting for quite some time, especially about dairy milk and how it's important to have dairy milk. It's not important to have dairy milk. It's important that a child has mother's milk, and then once the child is ready to move on to solid foods, that's really all you need as far as
the... Yeah, and it's recommended for a baby to have mother's milk until 6 months, but I think it's better if they breastfeed for as long as they want.
Right, and that makes a lot of people uncomfortable. So we're sort of in a puritanical society here, where you don't want to see a 2-year-old nursing. It's a strange world, isn't it?
It's a strange world. Yeah. So that's the CNN article. So their focus in the headline is on plant-based milks. They don't explain that some plant-based milks are not recommended for children because they contain sugar. They contain artificial ingredients that might not be health-promoting. A lot of milks have carrageenan in them. Some people react negatively to carrageenan, and it's a gum. And there may be some other ingredients that are not health-promoting.
Here's the reason, though. They're trying to make it taste like dairy milk, and it's two different, no pun intended, two different animals. Plant-based milk, and you put a little vanilla in a soy milk that doesn't have any sugar in it, and it tastes wonderful. You want to sweeten your soy milk? There are natural ways to do that, but people are just going to grab the first item that they see without reading the menu and without reading the ingredients, and that's where the trouble starts. And why do companies feel they have to put all of that sugar and all of that gum and all of that, re-fortified garbage into these drinks, is to try to get it to taste as close as they possibly can to a dairy milk. And I think that's where we're heading in the wrong direction.
Yeah,
because you and I are now, you're now making making soy milk with just beans, soybeans. And we buy a milk over the counter, a soy milk over the counter, that has only soy and water. So I think that reading the labels is, again, a really, really good thing to do. But that whole concept of how we need milk as we get older is also not true.
I'm remembering Dr. Benjamin Spock.
Mm-hmm.
And he was renowned for decades of being responsible for a very famous book, The Baby Book.
Right.
And I remember growing up knowing about The Baby Book. That's what all the moms got, The Baby Book. Everything in there to raise a baby and a young toddler was in that book.
Right.
And I think it was the 7th edition of The Baby Book, where Dr. Benjamin Spock was in his 80s, and he finally came out and said cow's milk is not necessary, and babies and children should not be fed cow's milk.
Right.
And at that point, they labeled him a crackpot. So
sure.
He was somebody that you respected, and now he's a crackpot.
Sure, and that's because cash is behind the dairy industry. Well, you know that better than anybody. You have a history where the dairy industry is a big part of your ancestral past. with your grandfather.
Someday I'm going to write about that, but we all should remember the early 1900s, around the 1930s, with the milk mafia.
Right.
That they were out there murdering people, including my grandfather.
Right.
And the milk mafia, which still exists today, has in a different form, perhaps. They're like disguised now as lobbyists.
Right. Exactly.
They influence our politicians to create laws and subsidies and regulations that support the dairy industry, whether it's something that people want or not.
So let's talk about that. That's a really good segue. We were going to talk about food policy later on in the program, but how does it affect the consumer? Food policy. You were talking about Washington and lobbyists and how lobbyists influence politicians, and that influences what we, the consumer, and remember, we're not citizens, we're consumers, what we, the consumer, how it affects us. The food policy.
Yeah, food policy is a huge subject. Huge. And it covers everything about food, how food is produced, how we process it, how we distribute it, and how it's purchased.
Right.
And the agricultural system now, which is part of food policy, is so confusing and convoluted because simple foods like corn, for example, we now like gamble on its value.
Right. Because it's a commodity,
yeah,
right?
It's a commodity. And people are always like buying futures and affecting the price. And corn is an interesting food because we use corn not only to eat it for humans, but we also feed it to animals that humans will eat. And we also make fuel out of it, which is another disaster.
Right.
And we use it for oils for junk food, and we use it for sweeteners for junk food. And we've got a lot of different people pulling at corn and its value.
Right.
And food policy plays into all of this.
Right. And so when we're talking about food policy and kids, that's really where it starts to get crazy because, sugar, the science is backing this up. I'm not saying something that isn't backed by science. Sugar can be addicting or is addicting. And when
yes.
you start children, when you start them young, when you start humans young on sugar, it's very difficult for them to kick that habit. And plus, when you paint the picture of sugar as being something wonderful and happy and Willy Wonka-y, and everybody's happy when they eat chocolate, when you try to tell somebody that that's wrong, you get massive resistance, right? Well, how can you say that? That's like, you're depriving a child of something that they deserve and they need when they're growing up. It's part of their life. And, how can you tell a child that they can't have sugar after we've given them that? So it's such a convoluted mess. And
it is.
One of the guidelines that we talk about a lot at Responsible Eating and Living that you can go by is I'm sure folks are confused, and I'm sure they're sitting there saying, well, what do we do? How do we know? Well, here's a good way to dictate what you feed yourself and your family is make sure that the only thing you're giving them is whole plant-based foods, right?
Yep.
Fruits, vegetables. What is that thing you rattle off all the time? Fruits, vegetables.
Whole grains, legumes, nuts, and seeds.
Right. That's it.
Yeah. And if you do the Dr. Furman influence version, that's the G-bombs. Greens, beans, onions, mushrooms, beans, berries.
Right. So, and berries are very sweet, and fruit is very sweet, and there's a lot of wonderful things that you can do with just vegetables and fruits and grains and beans and things that and nuts and seeds that make wonderful dishes that no one's going to know the difference if they're dairy laced or if they're not.
So connecting this idea of food policy and the CNN article that I was just talking about, mm-hmm. they had this video that was on the same page as this article that I was talking about where they were slamming plant-based milks.
Right.
And the video had two people talking about a policy that had been passed in Davis, California, an ordinance. And it was about not allowing restaurants to include in a kid's meal soda or juice, that they could only include in a kid's meal water or milk. And the people in the video were slamming this, saying it was a terrible thing, that parents should be able to decide and kids should be able to decide. And there was a lot of, again, misleading information in this video. But number one, I asked myself, how old is this video? Because I remembered the ordinance in Davis, California, and that passed in 2015. So were they posting this old video?
And the answer is?
I guess so. But and what they don't tell you is that ordinance was passed in 2015, and then other cities outside of Davis jumped on the bandwagon and passed similar ordinances, and it's finally now law in California, SB 1192, California Healthy by Default, kids' meal drinks make a healthy beverage, water or milk, the default beverage for children's combo meals instead of sugary drinks. Signed by Governor Brown on September 20th, 2018. it was co-sponsored by the American Heart Association, the Latino Coalition for a Healthy California, Moms Rising Public Health Advocates, and the YMCA, and it went into effect in January. And it says it helps make it easier for parents to provide healthy drink options to their children while eating outside of the home, and it will help children form better eating and drinking habits that they will carry throughout their lifetimes. That's what should have been in the video.
Right, exactly. But it's clickbait, correct?
Yeah, it's clickbait.
And who do you come to get the truth? Aaron Harkless at Responsible Eating and Living.
Responsible Eating and Living.
Which is here to tell you the truth. And that's
yes.
what we're doing. So what do you feed your kids then? Let's talk about that. At a kid's party, for example, which I went to this past week. My great niece turned one. Hooray! And it was great.
Oh, she is delicious. You're a great niece.
Yeah, she
so
is.
So cute.
She's the best. And so they had a great kids' party, also with adults. And I kept thinking, you know, obviously they aren't plant-based, but they are concerned with health. And so I was thinking, what type of kids' menu would I make for a kids' party? Like at this, they had macaroni and cheese, of course, and they had hot dogs, and they had all of the standard chips and dips, and they had some healthy beans, and they had a healthy salad, but I thought I could do a macaroni and cheese that is all plant-based. We have an excellent macaroni and cheese at Responsible Eating and Living that uses cashews, but a lot of people have these nut allergies. So how do you do a nut-free, wheat-free macaroni and cheese? Because mine is really rich and thick and creamy. But we also have recipes for a gluten-free macaroni and cheese, which is just made with some nutritional yeast and a little miso and a little plant milk. And so there's ways around it. There's also these great things that you can buy on the shelf now that are plant-based. And it's interesting that it's almost like there's a war going on between the people who want to continue exploiting animals and using their products in food and the people that don't. And
yep.
you can see it on the shelves, you could see it in the grocery stores, you could see it that there's sections now where, you know, certain people don't go to the sections that have the animal products. I know I don't. And will we ever see a day when there are grocery stores that only sell plant-based products?
There are a few, yes. There are a few that are actually doing okay. I remember I had a couple of friends who built a vegan grocery store in, I would want to say, around 1999, 2000, about 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great idea, and they couldn't make it. They just couldn't make it. But now we see vegan grocery stores in Germany. I think they're bringing one to the United States, and there are specialty vegan stores here in the United States, and we want to see more of them.
Yes. So there's also, you know, a lot of people don't want to. There's plant-based dogs, right? Plant-based hot dogs. There's all kinds of them out on the market now. You have to also read the label there because you don't want any of your plant-based dogs to have any animal products in them. So some of them do, and some of them don't. And there's an ingredient that we want people to be aware of that would make a plant-based dog not vegan. And what is that ingredient that they put in some plant-based dogs that you informed me about long ago?
Oh my goodness, I'm not sure.
It's the same that's in some plant-based cheeses.
Oh, like casein.
Casein, right.
Casein is a milk protein. They slip it in a lot of things. Yeah.
Right. So you have to be careful there. And how is that spelled? Casein.
Casein is C A S. Let's see. Is it one S or two? Casein is C A S I E N, a slow digesting dairy protein that some people take as a supplement. Why?
Yeah, it's wild. So you want to make sure there's no casein in your veggie dogs, and you want to make sure there's no powdered milk, no dairy products in those.
The first thing I do when I read a label is I go to the chart where it says how much protein, carbohydrate, and fat is in something, and I look and see if it has cholesterol.
Right.
And if it has cholesterol, that's from animals.
That's a good tip. So, but here's another thing you can do, and I know a lot of people are going to go, what? But there's this thing that you can do to a carrot that makes it taste just like a hot dog. And I'm thinking, if you're at a kid's party, you're putting all of this. There was a whole condiment bar at this kid's party that I was at for my great niece, and it was beautiful. It was, you know, crushed potato chips, and they did all of these, chopped up this and that you can put on your dog. So by the time the dog was in the bun, it had like a pound of condiments on top of it. You can't even taste the dog because what you're eating is all of the condiments, right? So these carrot dogs are really fantastic, and there's lots of recipes on the websites for carrot dogs, vegan carrot dogs. Check it out. There's a smoky vegan carrot dog recipe. And we're going to come up with one soon too. But one in particular is a smoky vegan carrot dog, and it really sounds fabulous. And then you can pre-bake it in the oven, and then a couple of days ahead of time, keep it in the refrigerator, and then just throw it on the grill to warm it up and get the grill marks on it. And it's an unbelievable option that's very tasty and really easy.
It's all, and like you said, it's all about the toppings and the schmears. It's just like burgers, everybody. If you've got all the toppings and all the gooey stuff you want to add to it, the base is like insignificant.
Right. And the other thing is education. You know, I mean, we fail to educate our children, and that's why I really have to reference some of the conversations I've heard vegan moms talk about with their kids is, you know, we love animals. We don't want to kill them. We don't want to eat them. So that's why we are vegan. And, you know, you read stories to your children about the little lambs, and then, you know, you read stories to your children about all the wonderful little animals and how fun and happy they all are, and let's love the animals. And then, you know, you're doing it at McDonald's while eating a burger. So, you know, let's think about what we're doing. I mean, it's common sense. And we're giving them cats and dogs, but we're telling them that it's okay to eat cows and chickens and pigs. And that just, you know, that doesn't make sense.
We're a very confused species.
Why do we do that?
Yeah, why do we do that?
And the greatest line I heard, and again, to talk about our theme with how kids are taking over the world, which is wonderful, is when a vegan child was asked about, do they eat chicken? They looked at them in shock and said, we don't eat chicken. Chickens, we don't eat them. Chickens are our friends. And, you know, I mean, that makes sense. That child just made a whole lot more sense than saying, to then, you know, coming back with someone saying, well, no, you know, we have to eat chicken because, you know, that's what the chicken is here for. It's for us to eat. That's not true. None of that's true, and it doesn't
simply
mean
not true. Anyway, Gary, I hope you make some kid party food for me sometime for this kid. I would like carrot hot dogs and macaroni and vegan cheese, please.
Well, we did sort of do a wonderful party the other night. We made pizzas before we both left on our separate journeys. And, you know,
that
that's
was
great.
Fun.
That's great. A kid's party where everybody gets their own small pizza shell or, you know, the pizza shell, and then put your own toppings on it and throw it in the oven. That's a fun party.
That's really fun. And you can buy the pizza crust in advance. We have a great gluten-free pizza dough recipe. I highly recommend that you try.
Right.
It's amazing. It's a yeasted gluten-free dough. It's very yummy.
There's a lot of party time coming up now because it, you know, it's the second day of fall. And so that means, you know, Halloween's going to coming up, or if you don't celebrate Halloween, you celebrate the harvest, whatever it is. This is great time for kids, costumes, lots of fun, trick-or-treating, all of that. We're talking about sugar. There's a reason for it. We're talking about kids. There's a reason for it. And there's a lot of things that we do at Responsible Eating and Living that's right up on the website. We have a lot of recipes. We have great Halloween parties. We're going to be putting up more content about that because we believe in kids, and we want to start showing how easy it is to raise healthy kids. And let's talk about that word, healthy. Why is that such a bad word? Why is that such a bad word? Has that been exploited too? Has that been, well, if we start talking about how important health is, maybe we're not going to be able to sell as much crap to kids. So, and who buys it? Parents buy it. And that whole juice box scenario was just really telling. You know, go to the next time you're in an airport, go to the little bodegas, little grocery stores, and see what kind of options there are. There's a lot of sugary drinks.
There are.
Excuse me. There's a lot of athletic drinks, too. I see a lot of kids drinking Gatorade and
and
this other stuff, Red Bull, energy drinks. I mean, I know we're being somewhat redundant by continuing to talk about it, but why is the concept of drinking why is the topic of drinking so controversial? You know, because there's so much cash made by selling you drinks. I mean, look at this whole water industry. Someone the other day said people who sell bottled water aren't in the water business, they're in the plastic bottle business. And now, now all of a sudden, everyone is up in arms because of the plastic bottle, the crazy plastic bottle scenario.
It's a disaster. Here's another thought. How everything is connected and not necessarily in a good way. So when we're sitting down for a meal, we really don't need to have a beverage at that meal. We shouldn't be drinking while we're eating.
Right.
And in a restaurant or even at home sometimes, people are drinking. And one of the reasons they're drinking is because the food is too salty.
Sure.
So we have a natural desire. Well, it's not natural. We have, or maybe it's an,
we've been anyway conditioned. I mean, what's the first thing a server does when they walk up to your table? They ask you,
what would you like to drink?
Can I get you some drinks?
Yep.
And again, that they're told by management that, and I've been a restaurant manager, and I know that that's a real big ticket item is drinks. And what you want to do is raise that ticket item, raise that ticket total so that more money comes into the restaurant, more money goes into the server's pocket. I get it.
Yes. And eating food that is salted and salted more than necessary, and I think that's salted, period, but a little salt might be okay, but a lot of food available today has too much salt, and that naturally makes us want to drink.
Right.
And it's a cycle.
Right. And just be aware of that. I mean, it's not going, you know, when you go out, a lot of people want to celebrate. They want to have something that they don't normally have at home. I get it. But just be aware that you are being used as a consumer. And sure, that's what going out is all about, is you're spending your money on hopefully a quality product. But a lot of times we think that by going to a place that we're going to get a bargain or a deal is good for us. And in reality, it's not. It's really kind of defeating the purpose. It's making you sick. And this morning, walking back from the train, I flew in early this morning, took the train. It was 6 o'clock in the morning. I walked from the train station home and passed a McDonald's. And there is a family of five sitting in a McDonald's having breakfast. And they had their backpacks. They're ready to go to school. And that's where they were having breakfast. And they were all eating.
How sweet.
breakfast burgers and fries. And
oh,
they
what
had,
fun.
Yeah. And so.
What great way to start the day.
And I'm sure you're thinking that you're doing something good for your family and saving money at the same time. But in reality, it's going to have an adverse effect. And the science backs that up. It's not just something I'm saying off the top of my head because I'm trying to be this prude and not have fun. But I know you're in a bind, you know. What else are you going to do? You only have so much time. You're not going to have enough time to cook breakfast. Everybody's got to get out the door at a certain hour. And so the fastest way to do that is let's feed them at McDonald's. And there's got to be an easier way.
And, you know, this is connected to food policy, too, because our food policy encourages having fast food restaurants and makes the food appear extremely inexpensive. It really is more expensive. We pay for all that food through subsidies that are subsidized with our tax dollars. And the sad thing is, I was reading about this in this book that's coming out called The Meat Question, that one of the reasons why we see meat eating on the rise is not just because people can afford it. It's because there are some areas that are poor and people don't have access, and fast food is all that there is, or is, quote, affordable and convenient. It's not because they're making a choice. This is what I want. This is it.
Right. That was very chilling to read that. Other sections of communities are cut off from any fresh food, from any healthy food options. And all of the crap food is channeled into these neighborhoods. And that, and I guess you call them food deserts?
Yeah.
It's really... It's heartbreaking, and we're here to stop that. Our little tiny company, and that, you know, which reminds me, Responsible Eating and Living is here. It's a nonprofit. It's here for you. We exist because of you. We are supported by listeners like you. That's really important for us to keep reminding you, is that we aren't subsidized by any food companies. Or any, we're not here to sell any products. We're a nonprofit that basically tries to and succeeds in getting you the truth about what you're putting into your body and what you're putting into your family's bodies. And a lot of the things that are really important to us might not be that important to you. So we'd like to hear from you as well, and you let us know what you feel is important to learn about, and we'll do the research for you and come back to you with a lot of truthful information. Again,
that's right. And the email to do that is info@realmeals.org. info@realmeals.org.
Right. And if you have any questions for us today, this is live. We're coming at you live. I'm sure you could hear all of the beeping in the background from all of the New York City sounds that are going on right outside our office window. Give us a call. The number you can do that with to ask us a question is, what is that number, Karen?
Oh, yeah. I always get this. I've been saying it for 10 years now, and it's 1.
In case you use a phone.
If you use a phone. Well, if you're listening on PRN.FM, the number should be there, but it's 1-888-874-4888.
Right.
888-874-4888. Yep.
Call us with your questions. We know everything about food, and we know everything about how to make a kid's party. And there's going to be a lot of parties going on. This is the holiday party season.
Yeah.
So check out our website at responsibleeatingandliving.com. We also have an app. An app. Yes, we have an app. So you don't have to type in responsibleeatingandliving.com every time.
I am so proud of that app, and I don't promote it enough. Thank you for bringing that up. I use it all the time.
Right. Let's talk about that app. You can you can put it on your iPhone. You can put it on your Android phone. You could put it on your, you could put it anywhere you want. Anywhere an app will go. You could put it on your on one of your pads or your tablets. And
I use it mostly for recipes, our recipes, but it's so convenient.
Right. And we've been doing this. You've been doing this show since 2009, correct?
Yeah,
you've
10 years.
Before podcasts were a thing. You know, now everybody's got a podcast. But you've had your podcast since 2009, and you've been bringing
thanks to the Progressive Radio Network that was progressive before anybody else was up there.
Right. The Progressive Radio Network is awesome. We love those guys. And we've got a lot more wonderful stuff to talk about today. For example, how does Election Day voting make our food policy?
Yes. I wanted to talk about voting. Thanks for bringing that up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so food policy is very complicated, very important, and our elected officials are the ones responsible for making that policy. So it's really important to educate them and also vote for the ones that are going to support what you believe in. And we really do have an obligation to educate our elected officials because right. they're bombarded with all kinds of information.
Right.
And I just recently, as of last year, became an election poll worker. And I do it because I feel like it's an obligation as someone who participates in this society. I think voting is very important. And I was curious to learn how it all worked. And yesterday, the first day of fall, it was 88 degrees here in New York. Thank you, climate right. change.
right.
I walked about an hour to a training class for the upcoming voting season that we're going to have in New York. It's going to be the first time we've had early voting, and there will be about a week where the polls will be open for people from about 8:30 to 5 to vote, including Saturday and Sunday. And there were a number of changes to the voting procedure that we learned about in our training. And I have to say, New York's not perfect, but I am very proud of what goes on, especially when it comes to voting in New York. And since voting affects the people we elect, and that in turn affects food policy, this is a very important issue. And our vote is very important. So in New York, what we've done for a long time is we have these books that have everybody in a particular election and assembly district. Their names are listed in the book. Their signature is in there. We don't ask for ID. If people are in the book, you don't ask for it unless the book specifically says ask for ID. And I really love that. And the ones we ask ID for, I think it's if it's their first time voting, you have to double check their ID, but it'll say in the book. Anyway, these books, they're a little time consuming to find the name, whatever. Everything now is on an iPad. So all the poll workers will have this cute little iPad, and it won't, it'll have, in addition to your particular district's list of names, it'll have everybody else. So if somebody comes to your polling place and it's the wrong place, you can tell them where they're supposed to go.
Wow.
And this is wonderful. Why not make the voting process easier? Personally, I think it should be a law that every citizen vote, and it should be so easy to vote.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so I was kind of excited. It's kind of tedious to go through these trainings because a lot of it is self-explanatory and just, I don't know, but you have to go through it. So I was happy to see what some of the changes are. The last thing in New York that needs to change is we need to improve the affidavit vote. So if things don't line up and either you're not in the book or you're in the wrong place and you still want to vote, you get a special ballot called an affidavit vote, and it's manual, and you fill it out. And in the last election for Queens District Attorney recently here, the affidavit vote made the difference because two candidates were very, very close and they had a recount. And apparently there were a lot of affidavit votes that were thrown out. And this, wow, this was a red light to me that there's a problem with the affidavit vote, and it's important, but we need to make it better. Yes. Anyway, so voting is important. And I think everybody should get more involved.
Yeah, and it affects food policy, which is what we're talking about.
Because it affects food policy and all policy. And, right, you know, also what I love about New York is they are so positive when it comes to diversity. We are taught right in the beginning of the training that we have to be kind to everyone. We have to be compassionate. We have to look them in the eye. And we have to help them any way we can. And this is a life lesson. And right, I just love it. And I think, what's happening in other states? Do you folks know, are you from other states? And do you know what your election policy is like and what voting is like? I personally think it should be the same throughout the country. We should all have the same tools. We should all have the same uniform procedure, but we don't.
Right. Fantastic job, Karen. That's really wonderful that you're doing that. I'm constantly amazed by your fortitude, your perspicacity, your all of the goodness that is you.
Thanks, Gary.
Yeah. Hey, and you know, we're talking about food on this show all the time, and you know how policies, government policies, et cetera, affect. Basically, we talk about politics. We talk about the culture and how all of that comes through food. I mean, the title of this program is "It's All About Food," and it really is. I mean, the essence of this of life is we need to eat to live, right? And there have been titles of books, "Eat to Live," but you know, how do you want to live? What's the quality of your life? My father just passed away in February, 93 years old. He ate donuts and he ate meat. And but the quality, what was going on inside his intestines, was the question. How was that affecting? Could he have lived another 93 years if he had eaten to live in a way that improved the quality of his life? And so, yes, you're going to have stories. You're going to come back with stories. My grandmother never ate any vegetables, and she lived to be 105. Sure, that's going to happen. But there's a level of what's going on inside that body that that affects how you move, how you view things, and I'm telling you, as someone who used to eat meat and now someone who doesn't, it makes a world of difference for me. I have you've heard me say this before when I've come on Karen's podcast. I have lost almost 100 pounds. I have boundless, I have a bottomless pit of energy now. It's difficult for me to sleep because I have so much that so much energy that I just want to keep moving and doing things. And so check it out. Don't take my word for it. Give yourself a 30-day I'm only going to eat plants challenge, and let us know how you're doing. It makes the world of difference. And a lot of people say they try, but they can't because they need that protein. Well, plants have protein.
Protein, all the amino acids we need.
And a lot of people say, well, I can't eat soy because there's that big soy myth. We've broken that soy myth. We have videos up on our site. We have podcast after podcast after podcast supporting the fact that that is just a myth, because it threatens the people who farm animals for food. And
people like myths. People like believing in myths. But I wanted to mention one more thing, which is very important today, right now, today. So my motivation for becoming vegan, everybody probably knows this, was for the animals. I didn't want to kill animals. And that's my foundation. But right now, today, the environment is in a crisis, a very serious crisis, and people don't want to acknowledge it. I mean, people are complaining climate change is the issue and the environment is warming up. But we need to do more. And everyone needs to reduce the amount of animals they're eating or eliminate it.
Right.
This needs to happen. Otherwise, we're doomed.
The quickest way, a vegan diet is the single biggest way an individual can reduce their impact on planet Earth. Period. That's it. And that is easy to do from your own little house where you live, or apartment, or little space corner of the world that you occupy. You can do it by what you buy. We were talking today about being consumers. We're all consumers. And if you think about the impact of that one sentence, a vegan diet is the single biggest way an individual can reduce their impact on planet Earth, you can change it today. You can go out today and you can have informed purchasing power, because you're listening in this program. And you could say, okay, I'm not going to contribute to global warming, and I can do that how? I can do that by what I eat. And I'm going to stop buying food that is exploited and is exploiting the earth. It's exploiting the atmosphere. It's taking things, it's adding things that are limiting the time this planet has left. It's really a crisis. And again, I'll repeat, a vegan diet is the single biggest way an individual can reduce their impact on planet Earth. You don't have to go out and buy a new car. You don't have to go get an electric car. You don't have to start, it's easy to just say, I'm not going to purchase products that are animal-based products. That's it. And that's greens, beans, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, nuts, and seeds. And there are ways to put that stuff together that are delicious. And now we're in the season of comfort food, and we're talking about macaroni and cheese and all these things that people are going to talk about. Well, it's the fall. We have to have comfort food. I have to make all of those gooey dishes. And there's ways to do that, soups and salads and casseroles and one-pot meals. There are ways you can do that and not have any animal products in it, and have it taste just as delicious as you think the stuff that you make with animals is. So
the name that's trending right now is Greta Thunberg, who spoke to the UN. And if you haven't seen her very compelling speech, it's all over the internet. You can read the transcript. You can watch her. And she says it all. She's a vegan. Right. She didn't mention being vegan in her speech, but that's fine. She's walking the walk.
Right.
And she was telling everyone, we don't have time. I was kind of irked reading some commentary in the New York Post, which is very conservative, and this guy was kind of complaining that she was acting like a stubborn child or something who wanted her way, and that some of these things take time. And the point is, it's been decades people have been talking about doing something for the environment, decades. And now we're down to like 8 years before, you know, we don't know exactly when.
Global warming has been discussed not only for decades, for hundreds of years. And,
well, that's right. Was it, who's that playwright who was talking about the environment?
Yes. Well, that's
Chekhov.
Everywhere.
Yes.
Anton Chekhov. And, you know, it's nothing new, but we're down to the wire here. And so a vegan diet is the single biggest way an individual can reduce their impact on planet Earth. You know, carrying around little stainless steel straws, that's great.
And the argument that nobody else is doing it, why should I do it? Do it. Just do it. Do it and try and get as many people as you can to do it, because the clock is ticking. Yeah.
You could try to take your stainless steel straws with you. You could try to not drink out of plastic, but that's not going to have a bigger impact than going vegan. So go vegan today and let us know if we can help. And remember, we're supported. This program is made possible through listeners like you. So if you want to donate something to us, do that too. You can go to our website and find out how to do that.
ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com. ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com. And please share whatever we've got up there, because we have a lot of wonderful information.
Yeah.
So we're out of time, Gary. Again, I don't know how we did it.
We did it, and we both came back from trips, and we were babbling. And thanks, everybody, for listening.
Yeah.
We love you. We love you, and we love PRN, and talk to you next week.
Yeah, I want to say that my guest next week will be Jonathan Safran Foer. I'm very excited about this. He has a new book out called We Are the Weather. He is a best-selling fictional author as well as nonfiction. I think he might be one of the greatest American writers today. So I'm looking forward to speaking with him next week. Thanks for joining me. You've been listening to Gary DeMattei and me. I'm Karen Hartglass. This has been It's All About Food. Have a delicious week.